Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. Today, we're going to be doing Blank Check. This movie celebrates its 30-year anniversary. Also, too, I have Stu here and also Smith here from that podcast, from It Has an Age Well podcast. Or It Doesn't Fold Up podcast. But anyways, it's a pleasure to have them here to break down this film scene by scene. And yes, I know this movie hasn't aged well, but you know, we're just going to go in and strip away the nostalgia, talk about scene from scene, and let's go on ahead. Let's welcome Stu and Smith to the show. And hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing fantastic. Sorry about that. I didn't mean for my intro to cut you off over there. I apologize.
No worries. No problem at all. Okay.
So let's talk about this for a minute here. So tell everybody what your podcast is about and how you do your breakdowns and stuff like that, because I love your podcast. I love how outspoken you guys are. You guys are 100% honest, and you guys have no filter. You guys actually belong to our Unfiltered Studios podcast and everything. I just want to point that out. But tell everybody about what your show is.
Sure, yeah. So we're the It Doesn't Hold Up podcast. So essentially we review a movie, TV show, cartoon, video game, whatever, something from our past that we really, really loved as kids or years prior, and we review it as adults and look back at it now. Does it actually hold up? And more often than not, it probably doesn't.
Oh, it definitely doesn't. The amount of stuff that we've watched where I just like, oh, why do I keep ruining my own childhood?
Yeah. I did a ratio recently of how much stuff holds up versus doesn't, and most of it doesn't. The odd one, but like, yeah, they're still pretty cool, but a lot of it is a part of shit.
My question is this for you guys. Like, what was the one thing that you guys reviewed that you actually felt like it did, like, made you outraged because of the fact it didn't hold up to your childhood?
Oh, man. So many. Yeah, that really didn't hold up.
In particular, I loved Jim Carrey when I was younger, and we've done Ace Ventura and The Mask. Ace Ventura is troubling from beginning to end. The Mask is also not great. And it's just, it's that real kick in the teeth of something that I thought was great as a young man, that now just you look at it through modern eyes, through adult eyes, and say, oh, that's really not very good.
Yeah.
You know, it has been a minute since I've seen Ace Ventura, so you guys might actually inspire me to do that kind of breakdown in the future, be it through adult lens.
No, you definitely should. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah. I noticed you're doing American Pie as well. We recently reviewed that, and apart from an incredibly troubling scene midway through the movie, it's still very, very good. But yeah, this one scene aside kind of ruins the entire movie. But yeah, so I'll be interested to get your take on American Pie as well.
I can't wait to actually dive into that on Tuesday. That's going to be one of my favorite movies that I'm going to be reviewing, and seeing how that holds up against with adult lenses reviewing American Pie.
Yeah.
So with that being said, let's go on ahead. Let's talk about this movie nostalgically. So my question is for you guys. So when you look at the movie Blank Check, and I know, Stu, this is your first time seeing it. What was your take on it the first time that you said that I was going to review this film?
I mean, I'd never even heard of this movie. I mean, it really struck me as strange because it did come out in the UK. And we did get a theatrical release, and made quite a bunch of money as well. But I'd never heard of it, and I'm quite au fait with Disney movies. But I'm like, I've never heard of this. So I was like, okay. And I'm like, all right, I like Disney stuff, so let's give it a go. Let's watch it. But yeah, I watched it last night, and
Likewise, when you told us what the film was, I thought it's ringing a bell, but I'm not sure that I've seen it. So anyway, I started watching it last night, as I got a bit into it, I was like, oh no, I have seen this. I have.
Oh really?
Yes, yeah. I thought I have seen this. Like, it suddenly all these bells started ringing, and I was like, oh yes, this film. I have seen this. Now, weirdly, it's the kind of film that I think as a 9-year-old, which I would have been when this came out, it should have entered into my regular rotation of films that I'd keep watching. But for some reason, it didn't. And watching it now, I can't see why as a 9-year-old it didn't, because it speaks to all of the things that I would have really sort of locked onto at that time. But for some reason, this film then, even as a 9-year-old, didn't do it for me. And it might be that I didn't have regular access to it. Mm-hmm. Most of the films that I have from that time, which were in regular rotation, were films I had on VHS, films that were on TV a lot, which this in the UK wasn't. It wasn't repeated that much. You could have got it on VHS, but for some reason I didn't. But I do remember having seen this before.
And you see, for me, I never went to the movie theaters to see this movie, believe it or not. Usually most of the time, my mom takes me to every single movie that I want to go out and see. Then I remember my friend's mom is like, my kids did not enjoy this movie. I did not enjoy taking my kids to see this movie. And I'm thinking to myself, why didn't they enjoy it? It made me want to see that movie even more because they said that they didn't like it, right? So, you know, my mom was going to take me, and then all of a sudden a week into it, they took the movie off.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Wow. So I never got around to seeing it in the movie theater. So my grandmother bought me the movie on VHS. And so I went on ahead, watched it. What? Loved it. I was geeking out about the video games he was buying, the whole entire arcade thing, the whole entire fighting arcade, the racetrack for the go-karts, the swimming pool, the castle. I'm like, this is what I want. This is what I want. And I was like, yeah, my parents don't understand me. I'm going to go on ahead and buy my own house and everything. I can't wait to move out. This is going to be a fantastic experience. And none of that stuff ever happened to me, even as an adult.
It's weird when you say that. So when I was watching it, the reason I say things I would have locked onto as a 9-year-old, I as a 9-year-old had a real, and I'd seen it in films, I really, really wanted as a child to have my own desk.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to have a big desk that I could sit behind and be all business. I had no idea what that meant.
You know what's weird though? My brother actually had a desk, but I never did.
Well, like a big sort of leather topped one.
Yeah, like when we would play school, he would actually thought that he was actually the school teacher. He actually had a phone. He had all this other stuff. And me, I'm like, I want the next action figure that's coming out. I don't care about this. I don't want school supplies. I don't even like school. So why would I buy something that I don't like?
Actually, yeah, I'm with you on that, John. Yeah.
So my brother is a different breed than I am. But But nostalgically for me, out of 10, me going Yahoo and everything, I'm going to have to put this as like a 7.5 out of 10 because of the fact that nostalgically with the video games and wanting a limo and fighting with my parents and stuff like that at that age group and stuff like that, that's where I land nostalgically for it. So what about for you, Smith, though? What do you land nostalgically?
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. I think it's probably around at 7.5. It's lacking, I think, even nostalgically, some of the charm of the films that really hit from that era. And I think being British, it probably speaks less to me slightly than it would to an American. Because I think the childhood experiences of that time are probably quite different. But yeah, I'd say about 7.5 in terms of, you know, the multiple montages where I'd sit there and go, that is what I want my life to be.
Yeah. And that's what you would do if you were a kid. You would be buying all that shit if you were.
To be honest, it's kind of what I do now.
Yeah, that is true.
So we are actually living the dream.
Yeah, giant arcade. Oh, all right then.
But, okay, so this is actually something anyways, let's go on ahead. Let's break this thing scene by scene. But also, too, Stu, is there anything else that you wanted to add as far as your first time viewing or anything?
It just, for me, I'm sure we'll cover it. It just seemed like it was ripping off a bunch of movies. Like, I'm like, what is it? Like, Richie Rich? And then later on in the movie, like, Home Alone? Like that. It just seemed like, what was popular around this time? And merge it all together. And be like, I kind of wish, like Smith, I had watched it as a kid because it probably would have been a movie. And like yourself, John, as well. I'm like, you know, I would have really got behind this. But then as an adult, I might be like, ooh, want to reevaluate. So I am kind of upset myself I hadn't seen it. So yeah, I'm at a disadvantage, you two, where you're a bit familiar with it. But if I had to, and let's theoretically say I had seen it, if I was to give it a nostalgia rating, I'd say probably a 6.
Okay, that's actually fair. That's actually close between our ratings and everything that Stu and Smith and I have. So yeah, I can definitely see that. So anyways, guys, welcome back to Movie Lovers Night, the show where we talk about movies, money, and all the mayhem in between. We're diving into Blank Check, the movie that made every 90s kid dream of finding a blank check and going on a spending spree. Who needs financial literacy when you have a kid with a cool million? From water slides in the living room to shopping sprees and that would make Richie Rich jealous, the movie had it all. But let's be real. The real fantasy was a kid managing to outsmart a bunch of bubbling adults. And let's not forget the classic 90s villain trio. The clueless banker, the bumbling croc, and the inexplicably subway limousine driver. Seriously, what's up with that guy? Oh, and the ultimate lesson of the movie. If you have $1 million, forget about investing or saving. Just buy a mansion and a go-kart track. Because YOLO, right? If you think that little slang word is outdated since 2012, you haven't seen anything until you actually seen Blank Check. If you think that, like I said, if you haven't seen Blank Check, you think that slang word is outdated, just check out this film. So, now with that out of the way, we're going to go on ahead and dissect this movie scene by scene. So the story begins by convicted bank robber Carl Quigley escaping from prison. Soon after his prison break, Quigley enters a warehouse that covers $1 million he had hidden there sometime before his arrest, although it is not established exactly how he obtained the money. So that's the opening scene. For me, I forgot that it even started out this way as a kid. Like that whole entire thing blocked out my whole entire image of this film because I thought it started off, bam, with Preston, and then he goes over to the bank, and then he meets Quigley. Quigley writes out the $1 million check. But I forgot it was a prison break. But they don't even go into a background of Quigley. All we know is this guy's a bad guy because it's storming out. It's the 90s. And that's it. So what did you guys think about the opening scene?
My takeaway was it was Bob Morton from RoboCop. Like, ah! The minute I saw Miguel Ferrer, I was like, oh, Bob Morton's in this.
It's quite efficient in the way that it sets the scene, right? It is very sort of script writing 101, right? Bank robber running in the middle of the night, finds his money. You know immediately the kind of character you're getting. The things that I thought was, A, how far away from the prison did he stash that money? Because he's still on foot. Like, it must be just around the corner. And he's lucky he knows how to use an arc welder. Because getting that thing out of the floor, and I was just like, well, this is very convenient. And that no one's around. Okay, great.
And the warehouse also didn't get destroyed either. We also don't know how long he was in prison either. We don't know any of the things he's done other than the fact that he hid money for $1 million and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I had exactly the same thought as well with Bob Morton when Michael Frack came up. I was like, that and Hot Shots Part 2, it's the other thing that I know him from.
Yeah,
It has, it's kind of got a cast on it, and I'm sure I'll pick up on people as we go through. It's got quite a good cast of supporting character actors from the time who, quite a lot of them have the thing in common of being dead, which is. And anyone who hasn't, as well, something I do like to point out from 80s films, like
Wait, is Tone Loc dead?
Miguel Ferrer's dead, yeah.
Yeah, Miguel Ferrer, but is Tone Loc dead?
No, Tone Loc's the exception.
Okay, cool. Good.
Yep. Anyway. And this is actually the second movie that I reviewed that had Tone Loc in it, because the first one was Surf Ninjas that I reviewed. Yes.
Surf Ninjas, yeah, yeah. And Fern Gully, he's in Fern Gully as well. He does.
I forgot he was in Fern Gully.
He is indeed.
He had a little bit of a run.
Yeah.
Oh, and we've recently reviewed Ace Ventura that he's in. He's the best thing about that film.
He was the police detective.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to be talking to your ass. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's quite good in it. It's one of the only things that's really held up on that film.
All you need is the talking ass cheeks and it's good to go, right?
Exactly.
So then we go into the film, then cuts to 12-year-old Preston Waters, who's played by Ryan Bonzel, whose father, James Redbourn, works as an investor for a living and is a very frugal with money, so much that when Preston is giving a blank check from his grandmother for his birthday, his dad fills it out for only $11 when invited to a classmate's Butch's birthday party at an amusement park that he doesn't want to go to. Preston doesn't want to go because Butch acts more like a bully than a friend. And because Preston's father only gave him enough money for tokens to go on the kiddie rides. So let's talk about the family dynamic. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the whole family's assholes.
Oh, totally.
I'm going to be real. I think that this whole family's assholes. You have Preston, who has his own room. These other kids the brothers are taking over his room because supposedly they want to invest in something. And they're investors. We don't know what it is. They don't even probably know what it is. But hey, let's set up an Apple computer for them. And then the father goes, yeah, you can do a lot with that thing. Even learn how to make love to a woman.
And that's so fucking creepy.
That's a weird joke.
I'm like, wait, what?
It said, teach you everything you know except how to make love to a woman. And then his mother says, now I know what program to get for your father for Christmas. It's like, whoa.
This is a children's movie.
This is a children's
movie. Right.
And your children are right there. If my parents said that, I'd probably have to bleach my ears out.
I'd be like, I'm going to go drown myself now.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you. That's my childhood ruin. I'm just going to poke my eyes out with a piece of rusty metal. This will be fine.
I'm going to draw a picture that says bang head here, and hopefully I'll be unconscious to where you can actually feel bad for me, and I'll go into the hospital.
I mean,
but
the dad is you know, classic 90s business dad. He's just like, business. Everything's business. It's like, oh, you can make a lot. You know, you need to know the value of a dollar. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? You live in quite a nice house.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty frugal, but like, the house is amazing. It's not like houses we have in the UK.
It's not poor people. You're not middle class if you're living in a big-ass house like that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right? I'm sure they have a pool as well.
They're clearly not struggling. At no point is it revealed what the father does.
Pretty
no point to reveal what the mother does. The mother has three lines of dialogue in the entire film.
Right, and then she's like, oh.
She does. Yeah, just there. So that's fine. She's there.
That's all she says. Is, okay, so let me get this straight, guys. So you just want me to say, and I know what I'm kind of programmed that I'm getting for you, for the father, right? Yep. Okay, good. Okay, when do I come back? You don't.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, at the end, you can hold a cake if you want.
Yeah, you hold the cake showing your boobs.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even realize that until like later on. I'm like, wait, this woman has a low cut, V cut shape dress. I'm like, okay, so yeah,
it's yeah. I mean, James Redbourn, of course, is I know him most from Independence Day and The Game.
Meet the Parents as well.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. Also dead, but he's good.
But I also like how the grandmother gives him the check, gives Preston the check, and he goes, what the hell is going on over here? I'm over here. I have a blank check. I think something's going on with grandma. He goes, oh, okay. That's not a problem. It's just a blank check. We're just writing whatever she thinks that she wants. No, you're writing in whatever you think you want because you're a cheapskate and you don't want your kid to have extra money on him. Got it.
Like, oh, she forgot to. I mean, we could also just pick up the phone and call her and ask her how much she wanted, because phones are a thing that exists in this film.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, if they're like, oh, she's obviously just forgotten. It's like, she might have a serious mental condition. You may really want to go and check in on her. I mean, she's sending out blank checks. I mean, it's you know, Home Shopping Network are going to have a field day with this.
Yeah. And do you know where I thought the movie was going with this? I thought he was going to sign $1 million and rob his grandmother. I thought, oh, that's the way the movie's going. So when his father wrote the check for $11, I'm like, wait, what the fuck? Well, where's so this film going now then?
So what did you think the thing with Miguel Ferrer at the beginning had to do with
anything?
I don't know what's going on.
He might steal
Yeah, so then finally when the shit happens in the bag later on, I'm like, oh, now I get it.
First, you like, know what, that actually would actually make a life lesson, though, towards the end of it, is like, don't rob your grandmother. Don't
exactly.
Blank check.
I mean,
don't be an asshole.
If you need to learn that life lesson, you've got bigger problems. That should
right,
be pretty
exactly.
much ingrained by the time you're 12. Yeah. Don't rob your grandmother.
Right? But then he's just writes him out a check for $11. I'm like, come on, dude. You can't even give him like $20, which is a lot more feasible back in the 90s to give a kid a $20 check.
Mm. I mean, I'm trying to think back to when I was, I mean, obviously, exchange rates are different, but I think probably when I was that age, it'd probably be like £10.
I don't know. I've always seen that American dollars is like $2 to the pound. So I think
maybe
dollars is
maybe
$6.50. I don't know. But yeah, who knows? But we're talking 30 years ago.
On this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to Florida last year and no, not anymore. That was a more expensive holiday than I was anticipating. Anyway.
Like, you know what? I'm just going to stick to over here because I know what the money currency is over here. I got you.
Sure. Yeah, no, you sit with that. It's an American film. I'll do the math.
It's cool. But I was thinking to myself, dude, you know, $20 is nothing. It's just one, 2 tens and that's in, you're good to go.
Yeah.
President doesn't even want to go to the asshole douchebag ball bags birthday party because Butch is an asshole.
That's a
you're gonna
90s
make him go.
Film thing. That's a 90s film thing where people go to the birthday parties of people that don't like them. Happens in loads of stuff. It's like, why are you going?
Why are you invited?
Yeah, why are you invited?
My thing is that, okay, I know I was, oh, here's the thing. I was bullied in high school and also lower elementary. I was never invited to my bully's birthday party.
And if you were, you wouldn't have gone.
Right.
Yeah, you know it was a trick, right? If you go,
yeah, I would send a
shit kicked out of you, so yeah, you wouldn't go.
Right. Why would I want to get my balls busted out in public? I already do that enough at school. Why would I want to do that in an amusement park?
Exactly.
So, when he goes to the amusement park and he changes in and everyone's like, I'll have 40 tokens, I'll have this, I'll have that. And he was like, 6, please. And the teller's like, 6. So don't give him shit. You work there. You wind your neck in, mate.
Yeah.
What I want to know is, like, the amusement parks that we go to, we don't do that. We just pay one flat fee. You get your stamp on your hand and you go. Like, go into, like, Chunk E. Cheese for theme parks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing. We don't do shit like that. They're here either. You pay and you get in. Yeah.
That's the question I had. Because you do get them. So you get traveling carnivals in the UK that kind of have that pay-per-ride system.
We do too.
But in sort of your big standing, where you'd have like a massive roller coaster like that, it is flat feet. And I guess my question was in the US in like 94, was it more that system or was it more just flat feet?
It was just a flat fee. Like, for example, up in New Hampshire and Boston, we had a theme park called Canby Lake Park. So basically what you do is you go in and pay the fee and there's even coupons on the cans and everything that you can actually use. And then after that, you go in and get so much money off, they stamp your hand and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And go on as many rides as you want. The only thing that you have to pay for, of course, is your concessions and then your games and stuff.
Yeah. That sounds exactly like the UK then.
Yeah,
he gets to go on the rides, but he doesn't get to go on any of the good rides. He's going on a carousel and he just looks miserable. It's like, hey, I like a carousel. Don't go ragging on carousels.
He's in that little plane kiddie ride with the little gun, too.
They've got one of those at Universal in Florida. It's shaped like Kang and Kodos from The Simpsons. It is a pretty cool ride.
So you're like, so if this was you, so basically you would tell me that you would rather the kiddie rides than the other big stuff.
No, I do both.
Yeah. We tell you both.
Mix it up.
But if we're on a budget, we're okay. We're doing the shitty rides.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But then you also have that other scene, too, where it's like this waterlogged ride. This water guy. Preston's standing over it. What the hell does he think was going to happen?
Right, exactly. I called it. The minute I come down, it's like, he's going to get soaked, and it's going to be hilarious.
You got one of those two things right. He did get soaked.
Yep.
It was not hilarious.
No. Because we've seen
the scene. Hilarious. Inverted commas. Yeah, sorry. No.
All right, get this, though. That trope wasn't just used in this one in the 90s. It was actually used in a baseball movie as well. not Rookie of the Year. It was the one where the grandfather passes away and he passes the Minnesota Twins over to his grandson. And the grandson is still like in junior high school, and passes the baseball team over to him. And then what happens is the mother's on the date with the baseball player, and the son is with them, and they go down the same water slide as the character and as Bush's friends do.
Yeah.
And they both get soaked. So it's like a 90s trope that they did.
Okay.
Still not funny.
I'm impressed. He's also asking his father, Dad, are we broke? No.
No, it's just a nice cheap house.
The night he's got a nice house.
Cheap ass.
Why? Yeah. Why is he such a cheap ass? What's he doing with his money?
I mean, to be fair, if I had kids, I'd be like, that's my money. You're not having it.
Right? Well, but you know what comes to my mind, though, with the whole $20? My mom sent me to the mall with a $20 bill, and I couldn't buy shit.
Really? A VHS video or anything like that?
Right.
VHS videos in the 90s in the US.
Right. And all my friends are like, so, I go, look, we got a brand new hoodie. We got this. What did you get, John? $20. No, what did you get? $20. Get to do anything.
Just put it on a jaw.
Right?
Yeah.
But, let's go over to the next scene, which is Quigley visits the bank president, Edward Birdman, in the bank office to discuss his plans, threatening Birdman's family. If he does not comply with it, Quigley leaves Birdman the stolen money as the bills were constructive and translate, telling Birdman his plan to swap the stolen bills without suspicion. Quigley explains that his assistant, Juice, who's played by Tone Locke, will be stopping by Birdman's office with a check to be cashed in for $1 million the next day at 1 o'clock p.m. So now you have counterfeiting while at the bank and stuff like that, too. And I thought to myself, with this now, looking at my age and everything, I'm like, okay, so this bank manager is supposed to be washing your money in the bank, and you're walking into a bank with security cameras.
Yeah, that's the flaw of this immediately. Cool. Like, you've just walked in, incriminated yourself on camera, and you're writing a check, which surely could be traced. None of this scene makes sense. None of it.
As an escaped convict, I would say your primary goal would be to stay under the radar.
Just take that suitcase full of cash and just go to Mexico or something like that. Why did you say that?
Swan into a bank.
Not only that, but we don't even know if he even changed his name, his identity, or anything like that. And he's supposed to be wanted, so that part doesn't make sense either. But he's going into the bank filled with security cameras, and you're watching the money in the bank. You would want to do that privately outside the bank, not in the bank.
And walking into a manager's office without a pre-arranged an appointment. So any security guard or anybody working there would see this man just pushing his way into the manager's office and then cutting his telephone with a pair of scissors. Which I always wondered, would that electrocute you? But maybe
no, they're different. Different lines.
What do you guys think? I mean, and then you have Quigley telling him that he's going to threaten him. Then he gives him the checks at this point as well, and that next thing you know, he winds up running over Preston's bike. But yeah.
Yeah, and again, this annoyed me as well. And then he starts writing Preston a blank check. Like, again, entirely traceable. Like, why are you doing this? And what is it about? Why did he just go fuck this and just get in his car and drive off?
I mean, he's not shown himself to be particularly conscious about being in trouble. So he might well have just, you know, smacked Butch.
Right at this point.
Yeah. It's very strange. I mean, it's Michael Lerner playing the bank managers in Barton Fink. And the terrible 90s Godzilla movie, also dead.
Rest in peace.
Just put that out there. And the whole scene just makes absolutely no sense. If you were the bank manager, you should be like, right, I'm just going to call the police now.
Well, my takeaway from that was the bank manager was also a crook. Because again, why is he going along with this plan? Because at that point, does he threaten his family? Like, if you don't go along, is he going to kill your family? Is that late when he realizes he's fucked up?
I think he threatens his family almost immediately.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
But we also don't know if he's even friends with Quigley to begin with or anything.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no setup or anything like that. It was like, okay, was he the reason why he went to jail in the first place?
So he does mention that. He says something like, you know, you sung on the stand. So I think
So you own
Berman helped convict him, or at least send him down. And Berman's like, oh, you know, it was only all I could do to save myself. And he's like, all right, fine, but now you owe me this. I think that's why he's going along with him. That's the takeaway I got. Is this bit where he hits the bike? I forget. Is it before or after Preston's been into the bank?
Preston goes to try and cash the money, and Shay says, no, it's too little money or something. Yeah,
but at that point, he sees Shay's brochure. He's like, ooh, I want some of that, but I don't know if I can have that, but I want that. It's like walking into a candy store wanting a candy bar, but you can't get it because you're poor, because your dad don't want to have you.
You can't have it because you're 12. Right. And she is a grown woman. And this is the first time I've written down, stop flirting with that child.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really weird.
From the second they meet, she's like, hi there. It's like, no, he is 12 years old. Stop it.
What's bad is, okay, I know that we're talking about the $11. I actually have my note $5, so I kind of reduced President's money. So I just want to point that out. But no, he goes into the bank thinking that he could actually cash the check for $11. And he doesn't have no checking account. His dad didn't even set up a checking account, but he has a check there for $11. And then Shay just says, look, just come back. And please come back whenever you have enough money to be able to deposit the money, and then you can have an account here.
Is that okay? Thing, though? Do you really need $200 to open an account in America, or is that just some annoying thing? Really?
Yeah, wow. $200. Okay, it used to be $200 at one point at my bank. Then they reduced it to $100, which is a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah,
because you have to sustain $200. If not, you go into the negatives.
Okay.
So that's how they do things. So
I've had the same bank since I was a child. So I've absolutely no experience in opening a bank, but I cannot remember what it was in the UK. I don't think it was that much though.
Couldn't I think it might have been a pound, Smith. You know, I think it was one English pound. I think, yeah, I think so. Nothing.
Oh, there we go.
So
do we need to explain what checks are to any of the younger viewers?
Yeah.
I've got a checkbook somewhere, but I haven't used it in about 20 years.
Right? My mom still uses a checkbook.
Wow. Bless her.
My mom pretty much built the old school. That's pretty much... She's the founder of the old school because she still writes out a check. She goes, I need to write a check. I said, I know how to do one, but I refuse to do it because I have everything on my phone now. And it's more convenient that way.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Wow.
But after the meeting, quickly runs over Preston's bicycle, a Jaguar XJ, while Preston was riding out the bank's parking lot, chasing after Butch, who stole his birthday check. Pressed for time, as he sees a police car patrolling the area, quickly gives Preston a signed blank check and tells him to give it to his dad so they can buy him a new bike instead. Preston fills out the check for $1 million, printing it on his computer. He goes back to the bank the next day and is directed to Birdman's office by a teller, as the teller thought Preston was joking and she could not cash a check that size herself. Thinking that Preston is quickly his assistant Juice, Birdman cashes the check with $1 million from the safe behind the painting.
There are a number of issues right here. First of all, he gets home with his broken bike and his parents are like, what did you do to your bike? So your child almost got run over by a car.
You're so irresponsible, Preston.
If I also got hit by a car, I think my parents would be slightly more concerned by that than the bike's been destroyed. You shouldn't be allowed to have nice things. And then his solution to this, I mean, for a start, also Butch nicking his birthday check. What's Butch going to do with it? A check isn't made out to him. He can't do anything with it.
No.
Preston's solution to all of this, apart from having a very low-key argument with his parents in which he whispers most of his dialogue and I had to turn the TV upside to hear what he was saying... I want my own house. What? Speak up, kid. His solution is to commit fraud.
Yeah.
He's like, can't see any problem with this.
And how does he know Bob Morton had $1 million? Like, that makes no sense. Did he just know he was a bit of a crook and he's probably rich? Like, none of this plan makes sense at all.
I think it was just coincidental that this happened. It was
very coincidental.
Right. I think they wanted us to think that it was coincidental at the timing and everything because of the fact that you had all these other things were already in motion. It just so happens to be president decided to commit fraud on the same day of money laundering.
Yeah, but want to be realistic, try and rob this man maybe of $5,000. The fact he went, oh, I'm going to write a million and this is totally going to work. And it does, miraculously.
Look, Preston, we can't fit you in today's schedule for when you can commit fraud because we're doing money laundering today. But if you can come back tomorrow, we can probably go in and commit the fraud tomorrow instead.
Exactly.
That'd be great.
I think $1 million is probably also the largest number that he could think of.
Well, yeah. For us kids growing up in the U.S., we're thinking $1 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how we thought in the 90s was like, oh, $1 million, I can do a lot with.
Which I think this is what I was thinking when I was watching it. Like, because likewise, I think if so, you said to me £1 million when I was, when I was nine, I'd be like, wow, that's the most money I could possibly think of. That means I'm never going to have to work ever in my life. And don't get me wrong, $1 million is still a lot of money today, but it is not that life changing.
No.
In certain places, right? Especially, if you've got $1 million, if I've got £1 million today, I'd be like, great, brilliant, excellent. I'm going to be set for the rest of my life. I'm going to be comfortable. Can I stop working? Oh, no. No. I'm not young enough. I'm not old enough to stop working now. And this film also can't decide whether or not it thinks $1 million is a lot of money. It kind of flips on it slightly. At some points, it seems like it's infinite money and you do whatever you want. And then at some points, it's like, well, it's not really that much money. And it's like, make your mind up. Bloody hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But also, too, then you have Butch who also causes the scene and he goes, I saw everything.
Yeah.
But hey, you cop up some more money for me since you gave my friend over there, the asshole friend that I'm trying to be a douchebag to, money. I want money, too. But at that point, you have everybody in a crowded area looking at him, looking at Quigley, who's wanted. And he's like, look, I got to get the fuck out of here. Police are just coming out of here. Here you go, kid. Your dad will know what to do with it. Here you go.
Yeah.
But like you mentioned, though, Smith, is this, though. He goes upstairs. He goes up to his bedroom, goes over to his Apple Macintosh computer. And this is actually before we actually had iPhones and stuff like that, too, with Siri. There was nothing that was made like this where you actually have lips on the thing, and then you're trying to print out a check. So this is, I do have to say, that's pretty original for something ahead of its time in a sense for that. But at the same time, it doesn't make sense.
No, it is, but it's a thing that we've noticed a lot in films from the 80s and 90s. It's what films think computers can do. And it's like, computers can't do that. Computers definitely couldn't do it then.
No.
And it probably couldn't do it now. It's very, like, if you, skipping ahead to a later scene, but if you were to put, like, an artificial voice on a phone that you were literally just typing as it talked, you'd be able to tell, even today, pretty quickly, that is not a human being talking.
Well, there was AI in a bit.
Well, not anymore. He's also dead. So,
yeah.
So from beyond the grave.
Like, maybe that Stephen was buying that house at the time because he was alive. So maybe they're like, "Oh, Stephen Hawking."
Yeah. That would have been better. Also, the bit where Preston goes into the bank and he's like, "Juice," it's like, why do you think a hardened criminal who's threatened your family would send a 12-year-old boy?
Yeah, and makes no sense.
To be honest with you, over here in the U.S., if you send a minor, if let's say, for instance, you get a minor to sell drugs for you, for example, the minor wouldn't do that much time compared to an adult, right?
Okay.
So therefore, in Birdman's eyes, he's like, oh, Quigley must have actually thought this plan out. Maybe the kid's nickname is Juice, and he's picking up the money for Juice because of the fact he won't do that much time because he's a juvenile. So therefore, it must be him. And yeah,
okay, maybe. I mean, but would not Quigley do more time in jail for corrupting a minor if he was found and convicted?
And it's a fact, right?
I also did wonder at one point when he said Juice whether or not O.J. Simpson was going to turn up.
It was around about that time, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's a white Bronco.
But I like the then of course you have the bank teller's like, come with me, son. Walks them all the way up there. Then of course you have Birdman. He goes, Juice, nah, I'm not thirsty. just not thirsty. This is great. This is fantastic. And he looks at the watch because it says 1 o'clock. Preston shows up at 1 o'clock. And then you have Juice walking in at the bank at the same time as Preston's going into the office of Birdman's. And he goes, "Hey, darling, I see you over there with your little girls and everything, and you got a lot going on over there. But look, if you can be so kind to cash my check, that'd be great." And she goes, "Oh, you're not the only one with $1 million check today. Go see Birdman."
It still doesn't spell it right. Even when he walks past the kid with a backpack full of money, or very, very heavy backpack, doesn't they?
Backpack.
No, none of this is detective whatsoever.
Well, also, too, he was also thinking that the kid was skipping school. Also, at my age, though, too, we carried a lot of fucking books in our bags.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking, too, was like, okay, so, you know, that pretty much holds up to the truth in a sense because of the fact we think it's books and not money.
Yeah, okay.
He's like, "Okay, kid, go on ahead. Go. All right." And then here he goes into Birdman's office. He goes, "Hi, I'm Juice. I'm here to pick up $1 million that Quigley wanted me to pick up." He goes, "The eagle has landed."
Yeah, I actually found that scene kind of funny. Yeah. He's like winking and like, "What the fuck are you doing?" That was actually pretty funny. Yeah.
And Tony Logan's like, "Look, man, I don't know nothing about no birds. I don't know about any eagles landing.
Yeah,
I'm just here to cash a check." And he looks, he goes, "Oh, shit." Yeah. He doesn't say that because it's a Disney movie, but if there was, it's like, "Oh shit, he goes, "The kid, what kid? I don't know nothing about no kid. The kid with the backpack, he panics, and all of them are looking around trying to find him. And at that point, Preston's gone like Houdini. And yeah.
With a backpack.
And now Quigley, now they are actually screwed.
Yeah.
But yeah, then as Preston is leaving, okay, then the trio begins to search for Preston. Meanwhile, he embarks on an extreme shopping spree over the course of 6 days, buying a castle-style house by outbidding Quigley using the voice box on his computer over the phone, along with many other expensive items. Limousine service, go-kart, track, water slide, etc. He spends $999,667.83 of the original $1 million. Preston covers himself by saying he is making these purchases for a millionaire named as Macintosh, named after the brand Preston's computer, who lives in the castle house. He also makes friends with Henry, who is Preston's limo driver and best friend.
Best friend. Also leech of this man.
Well, yeah.
And you know what? You know, when he bought the castle, my takeaway was this castle was only up for $140,000. This amazing castle is $140,000. Now, I know it's 30 years ago, but I'm like, Jesus Christ, how much was real estate for just a regular house back then if a castle was $140,000? Right.
Do you know what you'd get for £140,000 in the area of London that I live in?
Fuck all.
£140,000. Yeah. Fucking nothing, that's what.
A studio apartment above a kebab shop.
Global pop.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah, it's the bit that really annoys me in films, just before the shopping spree starts, when his dad's like going out the house and he says to his brothers, "You make sure that he doesn't," you know, I can't remember what the hell it was he says to him, but the kid watches his dad go and then turns to the camera and gives like a little eyebrow raise, which I would do but can't because I don't have any eyebrows. He kind of goes, and I'm like, who are you raising your eyebrows at? Why?
It's very Home Alone-esque doing that, yeah.
He's trying to break the fourth wall, but yeah, it feels at trying to be, he's trying to be smart, but really he's being stupid at the same time.
I mean, I've occasionally broken the fourth wall. I mean, I'm not having cameras following me around, but every now and again, I'll turn to no one and be like, because you never know. I could
Big
be in
brother's
a
watching.
Situation,
right? Truman Show situation.
The bit with the castle where Quigley's trying to buy the castle. I was confused because at first I thought that the real estate agent was sort of his girlfriend or something because he comes in and kisses her on the face. And then it turns out that she's just a real estate agent. And then he doesn't know her. I was like, he did that.
Yeah.
He kisses her on the face. And I'm like, all right, must be like.
I didn't notice that, but that's a good call.
And then it's not. And I'm like, oh, you horrible man.
90s.
Don't do that. And then he touches her face on the way out as well. It's like, don't touch people's faces ever.
He's such a villain. He's such a villain.
Yeah, I mean, that made me more like, I mean, steal $1 million. I don't care. Do what you want. But
that's on mass contract. No, no.
Yeah, don't go around kissing people. Yeah, and then he buys the castle for like $300,000. I mean, that's a bargain, yeah, right?
And this scene, it completely ripped off Home Alone 2. You know, in Home Alone 2, when he's got the talk boy and he books the hotel, the Trump Plaza or whatever. I was like, you've literally just copied Home Alone 2 in this scene. And again, we said it earlier on about a robot voice and they're totally fooled. They're acting, they're speaking to a real person.
Luckily, this film doesn't rip off Home Alone at any other time.
No, no, absolutely not.
It definitely doesn't become Home Alone for 10 minutes towards the end.
No.
But you're right, though, because Home Alone 2 came out in 92, and 2 years later, this comes out. So, yeah, it's an exact ripoff of what the Potboy did.
Yep.
It's the guy who plays the limo driver, Rick Tecommen, who was... He's got a weird career, because I first noticed him in The Burbs.
Yes, he's in The Burbs.
He's like a main character in The Burbs. And then every other thing I've seen him in, like he's in Die Hard, but very, very briefly. And he's in Groundhog Day, but very, very briefly. And he's only in tiny roles in other films and this huge role in The Burbs. And I hadn't really seen him, obviously I had, but I didn't remember him being in it. Hadn't seen him in anything with this substantial role.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's really good because he's quite funny. He's quite like, he's quite likable.
I like his personality and his on-screen timing and everything. I really do like him as an actor.
Yeah, he's got good comic timing. He's a little bit like a Wish version of John Candy. You know, like, oh, yeah, can we go out for John Candy? No, we've got John Candy at home. We don't need to go out for John Candy.
John Candy's dead, so who do we get? Oh, let's go on and get him.
Yeah, it's like, John Candy's dead. Let's get Rick Tecommen. Oh, no, he's also dead. I shouldn't go after films.
Yeah, what is it with dead actors? Jesus.
I like your dark humor, though.
Yeah. What we do.
Right.
And then the limo driver just hangs around with him. I mean, I don't know if he was invited to hang around with him, but he does. It's slightly weird.
It's like he's his bodyguard.
Yeah, it's you know, I've never had a driver, but I think if I did, his main job would be to drive me places, not to come and hang out with me at those places. It seems weird. But then I think the whole thing with Preston in this film is he's got no friends.
That's just it. You'd think him getting all that money would then be like him having lots of friends and sharing the money with friends.
JCPenney is your one smart shop for back to school. More fashion, bigger savings. Plus thousands of deals under $20 for you and your family. Find everything kids need, from backpacks to blue jeans, uniforms to undies, and high tops to haircuts. For the teen and college crew, we've got even more. From cargos to crop tops, hoodies to hair care, perfume to Puma, and towels to toasters. Get back to school ready in one affordable stop. JCPenney, make it count. Offers valid through 7/28.
Still alone. He's still by himself and enjoying all these cool things alone. So I don't know whether that just feeds on money doesn't buy happiness. But I thought there'd be more of all these shitty kids would be enjoying the money and the material goods with him, but don't really like it. But there's none of that.
No, there isn't.
And you bring up an interesting fact, though. I didn't think about him having no friends or anything either. It's just him and the limo driver, and that's it.
Yeah. It seems to be missing those key component parts of this kind of film. Like, even in Richie Rich, you know, he knows that money doesn't buy you happiness, doesn't buy you friends, but he also makes friends along the way who then come to like him for not having any money. You don't get that in this film.
No, you don't.
You don't get, you know, by the end, he's like realized his family are all he needs, but the family never realized that money's not important. There's no kind of bit with the dad where he's like, oh, no, I just want my son. He never has that moment. He does a little bit, actually, but not in a huge way. There's no sort of age-appropriate love interest, which you'd normally have in a film like this. This is the bit where you'd start to introduce all of these elements, and it just doesn't happen. Instead, what you get is like three montages that go on forever and prove that money gives you the right to be a complete arsehole to everyone, because they are running around those shops acting like complete dickheads.
Yeah,
they do, because Preston points up to all the TV screens that he wants. He gets a leather jacket, which I thought was cool in the 90s to have a leather jacket until I sweated my ass off in the gym in upper elementary. Then he also got the trampoline. He also got the big, huge boxing gloves.
All of the things
What's that?
All of the things I'd want as a child.
Me too. And then also that other thing that was in malls too, where you stand in it and it rotates you around. I forgot that what that was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like a gyroscope.
Yeah, we had those in the 90s. Yeah.
I didn't want that as a kid because I was afraid I was going to get sick, but everything else I wanted. You also have the arcade, the go-kart track. You had everything a kid could want. It's like Neverland Ranch for Disney.
And he got it for all under $1 million, which I don't really believe.
And no, none of those days.
In a week.
Yeah.
The timeline of this film is slightly uncertain. I'm not sure over what period of time it's meant to take place. It feels like a week, but it could be longer. You're never really sure. The one thing I never wanted as a kid, actually, do you know that big bank of TV screens that had all of the lines?
Oh, like, so 90s.
I always want that because, you know, you'd have this big picture, but it'd be ruined by all the lines being all over it. You wouldn't be able to enjoy anything.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Right, and then, of course, I call it the Scarface TV sets. That's what I call it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. All these missing piles of cocaine everywhere.
I can imagine he spent half of his million just on blow.
Right.
That's why that film was missing.
That's why the adults like taking around with him.
Yeah, where's the blow?
But, you know... Then, you know, he has this big old huge-ass tub of ice cream in the back of the limousine.
Impressive.
And then all of a sudden, Henry decides to ask Preston, where does all this money come from? You didn't think to ask him this when he hired you, when you take him on a shopping spree, do all that other stuff?
If a 12-year-old kid throws a big pile of money at you and says, take him on a shopping spree, you don't ask questions.
Right. No problem. No questions asked.
You're not going to like the answers, and you're going to not get to keep any of that money. So just go with it.
Right. And then he's like, well, you know, McIntosh never had anything as a kid or anything. So So we want to live his memories through you. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. No problem.
It's that ice cream thing really bothered me as well. It was this huge tub of ice cream, which, you're never going to eat that much ice cream. Even as a kid, you must know that having a tub of ice cream that big is impractical. It's in a bin. Like, it's a bin full of ice cream. Who's going to
have
a bin?
It's like they got a big old huge ass tub of ice cream in a garbage can. Is that here you go, you rich asshole. Good luck.
Did you wash the bin out first? No.
Maggots.
No.
This is something else that happens though too. Now he's actually near the sunroof and he sees Shay jogging. Just coincidentally, jogging. It just scares the fuck out of her. With that big Joker gesture thing that he has on sunglasses. And he goes, oh, that's your ride? Yes. Oh, pretty sweet. Yeah, it belongs to my boss, Mr. McIntosh. Okay. Hey, you want to go out sometime? Yeah, okay, no problem. Yeah.
Sure.
And
you then stop flirting with that child. Because also by this point, it's been revealed that she is an FBI agent. That is even worse. You are a law officer.
And also, why was she an FBI agent working in the bank? Did she know that Bob Morton was going to come in and deposit all that money? Like, did they think you're one step ahead? Like, what?
I think they knew that Berman was crooked.
Trial.
I don't know how he's testified at a criminal trial. And probably in that trial been implicated as being party to crime and is still allowed to manage a bank.
Exactly. I don't get it.
Get you struck off.
But also, too, like, even after the montages of all the shopping sprees and stuff like that he does and before the limo ride, she comes over to see Preston, and Preston's in a bathing suit and this little blow-up car out in the swimming pool. And she goes, where's Mr. McIntosh at? Oh, he's away on business. You know, I'm watching the place, though. Here, he knows all about you, too. He does? Yeah, he knows all about you. And, by the way, I still want to... She goes, by the way, do you still have that $20, that $200 that you want to deposit into the bank? Yeah, let me go get it. He goes up the stairs, gets the check, and then slides down the slide because it shows male dominance because he thinks that he's going to land her... Because he got a swimming pool.
Also, completely ruined the check.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that. You're going to land in the water with that. No, it wasn't a check. He actually gets $200, like bills.
Oh, yeah.
Gives him.
Okay, I thought he wrote out a check for a minute. Okay.
No, he gets 200. No, because that's what the bank teller gave him. Earlier on, gave him cash.
Right.
He didn't got any checks he want. But
right, that's right.
I thought that inflatable car in the water was really cool. It was like,
yeah. And also, too, cool. There's no paperwork for him to fill out to actually have a check.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it was like...
taking $200 from a miner. In exchange to going on a date with him.
Exactly. As to hire a babysitter for $200. That's basically what he did.
Is it ever explained how far away this mansion is from his parents' home?
I think it's literally just down the road.
Because it feels walkable.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Edward Scissorhands, where you actually have that big old fucking castle.
Yeah.
And then you have this suburbs, and then that's what it reminds me of. That's something I wanted to mention before when we were talking about the castle, was the fact that you have this castle in the middle of the suburbs, and nobody sees that as odd. Like, you have that one neighbor. Could you just imagine the neighbor's like, look, I'm tired of looking at this fucking castle. This fucking kid.
Yeah. It feels like a vanity project. It feels like someone decided they were going to build themselves a castle and did it, and then was like, wow, I'm an idiot.
I don't know. There's another huge plot hole.
The property was for sale for so cheap.
Yeah. There's another huge plot hole. Like, he buys the house by doing the computer voice thing, right? Is there like a lot of due diligence you got to do? Like, you got to fill in paperwork, you got to prove it. You just go, oh, okay, there's the keys to whatever.
And here's $300,000 in cash. Do not ask any questions.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. She's taking
it. It's the Macintosh. She's off on business.
Business.
Yeah, you can't be like, is he dead? Is this like a Weekend at Bernie situation?
Yeah.
You killed an old millionaire.
You know what would be hilarious? If they actually had like a dead dummy or something and he just had him in a chair and just lit him.
Or like that bit in Home Alone where he's like saying there's people.
Blood,
home,
no. So
he's kind of like,
yeah.
It's also during this point where Quigley, Berman, and Deuce go looking for him.
Which is even more creepy.
They're like, oh, it's a newspaper. They've got listings about where children go. He's like, do they?
Why?
That seems like a red flag to pedophiles, is what that seems.
Right? And then he goes, do you see anyone that looks like him? Yeah, that kid looks like him. Oh, yeah, the Bobby twins over there looks like him. Look, I'm going to go get a fucking pretzel.
And also, it's a bit where, like, Perman's like, people might get the wrong idea. It's like, no, three grown men smoking cigars looking at children. Who could possibly get the wrong idea?
Perfectly normal. Yeah. On a Saturday afternoon. Yeah. It's the 90s.
It was the 90s. Most things can be explained. It was the 90s.
We didn't have the internet. We needed to fill our days somehow.
Yeah. Right? Might as well look for children that look like the kid that has $1 million.
Yeah.
But then... now you have the whole entire date scene with Shay and Preston. And also, too, this also sets up my fan theory as well. Okay, so go with me on here. So Henry is trying to teach Preston how to be a man at a date and what to do on a date.
Yep.
What I would do is, what you're going to want to do is, you're going to want to get a plastic bag and go to an all-you-can-eat buffet. But here's the thing. It doesn't say all you can eat here. It says all you can eat. So what you do is you go on ahead, you take the food off from the bar, you put it in your pockets, you have fresh food. No one can resist that. And my thing is this. My theory is this. I think he was trying to sabotage his date so he can get laid by Shay, because he's getting tired of fucking hanging out with Preston all day.
I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I just thought he was crap with women, but that is a very compelling theory.
Or this is also another thing too. I was like, he's done this himself.
Oh yeah, that's more
and everything. So like, he's teaching him stuff that he did. But yeah. I'm still going to go on my theory about the whole entire sabotage thing, because it just makes more sense to me.
I was thinking, if I look at the character arc, what I'm seeing is a man that's just accepted a kind of a wedge of bills from a child to hang around with him all day without ever signing a contract or seeing a proper employer. He's definitely a man that's filled his pockets full of food at some time to impress a woman.
Right? But it's like a 90s thing too, right? Where it's like, okay, well, we have a fat guy who likes food.
Yep.
So let's put him in a buffet. Because you know what? It's hilarious to see a fat guy to eat to steal food from a restaurant and put it in his pockets.
Well, I also thought he made a good point. I might actually try that. I'm not allowed to go to, I'm not allowed to go to buffets anymore.
So I can actually see you doing this. Okay, so let's see. This move does not work. So let's see. Oh, wait. Dating 101 with Henry. Okay. Gotta go and get food and put in pockets. Got it.
Yeah, Stuart will know I'm not allowed to go to buffets anymore.
You've embarrassed us for the last time.
Have you seen this man?
Yeah. It didn't end well. I'm going to say that and move on.
Yeah.
So then we're sitting down here. The two of them are having dinner at this fancy French restaurant. And then Preston winds up having lobsters, having a lobster dinner with Shay. And he's in a tuxedo.
He's being creepy. He's really creepy in this scene. He's really weird. It's like, oh, what's he doing? And then the waiter comes over and says, oh, compliments of the chef. It's like, how does the chef know who he is?
Oh, Mr. McIntosh has been coming here for years.
He's only had the place for a week. Open.
I thought he just moved here.
Doesn't make any sense. Also, gives her that necklace. Horrible fucking necklace.
Yeah, it is horrible. And she wears it as well.
It looks horrible. Also, she works for the FBI. That's evidence. You're not going to be like, wear that.
She's undercover, though.
Exactly. But yeah, I could see the FBI. That's a horrible fucking necklace.
That's horrible.
You know what? We're not even going to worry about even firing you. You should be ashamed to even be wearing that. You don't even have to worry about that. You just get a written warning and you get demoted. That's all we're going to do.
We have a store here in the UK called Claire's Accessories. And UK viewers will get that reference. And it is just cheap tat.
It really
is. It's the kind of thing the 12-year-olds, and you know, actually this kind of scans by girlfriends because they think it's grown up. They're like, oh, I've bought you this really nice necklace that cost me £5.
Yeah.
And you also have the other scene too, where after that happens, they go and play in a water sprinkler system. And then after that, you get chased by Quigley and Birdman and Toloke.
Yes. They're who all fall over. It becomes baby's day out for a moment. They slip and fall on their asses.
And also, he's spouting language like, your butt is mine. I was like, wait, what? That didn't sit well on me at all.
No, don't shout that after children. It's not a good look. And that butt belongs to Shay.
Silly.
You also know that it's pre-2000s because no one's worried about their phone. You'd never get any grown adult in a fountain after the year 2000 because, hold on a minute. I've got a lot of expensive stuff on me.
And why did everyone start applauding after doing that? I was like, this wasn't a show. Just a light or something.
It was the 90s.
Oh, okay.
They had 90s, to fill their 90s. Time
somehow. Sure.
Just like, oh, someone's got wet. Oh, it's the best thing I've seen all week.
But yeah, then after that happens, it gets chased through the sprinklers, and then you have Preston wants to throw Mr. McIntosh a birthday party. And then that also forced him into debt. It was actually his birthday, leaving only $322.17 in his account. He is forced into a showdown with Quigley, Juice, and Birdman after his trio managed to capture him and demand to know what happened to the money. He admits that McIntosh is a false name, to which Birdman suggests that Quigley can use Preston's purchase is in the McIntosh name to give him a new identity.
Which is not the worst plan in the world if he also already wasn't very recognizable as an escaped convict. Again, you're an escaped convict. What are you trying to buy? A castle? You should be living low. You should be living in the suburbs somewhere. Don't buy a bloody castle. That kind of stands out. Anyway, there was a whole bit in the middle of this as well where they chase him through the park to get the backpack. Have I jumped ahead, or is this in this bit?
I think it's just before the party that happens.
I mean, it's not a bad plan that Berman has. I mean, it's not a great plan, but it's better than what they've been doing so far, which is chasing a child. The bit where they drive after him in the park, like, you would just get arrested. But like, you've just driven a car through a public park and almost killed several people. Also, it's funny because it's where Preston drops the backpack.
Yes.
And then he has to circle back around and get it. from a completely different place than he originally dropped it.
Yeah. And then someone has grabbed some money and he just lets him have it, which is clearly like about, I don't know, $10,000 or something like that.
Just Corey, can I just have that back? Thank you. I'm going to need that pay for the party.
Yep.
Right? It's like, okay, you know what? Forget about the burgers and everything. Look, we're going to go ahead and take that money back. We're going to take the money for the lobsters. We're going to take that money back and we're going to throw a party.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like, it's like, oh no, I'm completely broke. It's like, you still own a very large house.
Right.
You could just buy a house.
There's also taxes on land tax too. So.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
My question
that's what this film didn't have enough of, the boring minutiae of tax and paperwork.
Yeah. Right.
And who the hell were these people at the birthday party? Like,
who are you? It's like all these people. This is where you need him to have loads of friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Have like a load of kids from his school there and like have the young love interest that should be there, but none of that happened. It was just a bunch of random people. And the woman who organises the party, who is she? Where has she come from? Why is she such a knob?
Right. How did he find her to schedule a birthday event? He should have got Flonk from that one movie, A Father of the Bride. He should have gone Martin Short.
Frank, yeah.
But at that point, though, too, I want to point this out, though, as well. Henry is actually leaving to go somewhere before he schedules the event and all that stuff. And then he's like, well, he goes, look, I'm about to go out. Do you want me to drop you off by your friend's house? What fucking friends? He doesn't have no friend. You are his friend.
None. Yeah.
And he also throws out the bully Butch at that time, too.
Yeah.
But here's another fan theory. Henry's going to go on ahead and bang Shay now. That's where he's going.
Yeah, that's where he's heading off to.
But do you remember the limo ride whenever they're looking at each other awkwardly?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, what the fuck were you doing? Yeah. What are you going to do? He's going to tuck you in at night. He's going to send you a bedtime story, and that's it, and go home and fuck Henry. That's what he's just wishing going to do.
It's the bit where they're in the limo and they're kind of like, there's this awkward sexual tension. It's like, stop flirting with that child.
He's 12.
You're a federal agent. You are going to get fired.
Exactly. And then, like you said, he hires that stupid money hungry dipshit of a, event planner.
Yeah.
And she's, how you doing? We're going to... Look, Preston, do you have any money? Rick, look, it's going to cost a lot more than that, okay? So she takes the whole entire bundle. And my thing is this, how can Preston add up all that money that she took when she took a whole stack?
Yeah, just 20 grand.
But I'm also with Stu, though, too. It's like, where's his friends at? What's he doing?
Yeah.
And then, of course... You know, you have that happens, and then it goes into the fact that she needs more money. And she goes, where's Macintosh? And then Preston's over there looking at the presents. She goes, that's not for you. That's for Mr. Macintosh. You don't have... So none of that shit is even Preston's.
No.
Which is even more fucked up, because even the parents even thought of Preston in the first place.
And also, why are the parents okay that he's going to work for this man? Like, I'm going to work for this rich millionaire, and his parents don't question this whatsoever.
Because his dad's business dad. His dad's 90s business dad, right? He rewards business.
My kid's got a job. That's all that matters. And even when our president hires his own brothers to do work around the castle.
Yeah.
His father don't care. As long as he has a job and not a fancy, he's good to go, you know?
And then the party is... I mean, I don't know where all that money went, right? It ends up costing, what, 100 grand for that party? You look at that party, you're like, wait, where's that?
That'd be cocaine. Silly.
Hookers and...
guns.
That's what's in those parcels. Full of coke.
Yeah.
What a party.
Yeah.
Hey, did you go to Macintosh's? Yeah, let me just tell you. It was fantastic. We started some cocaine, got some cookers, got some prostitutes, got some strippers. We're good to go. But that annoying ass Preston, he just wouldn't stay out of the fucking presence. But other than that, though, it was a cool party. Five stars.
Did you go to Macintosh's? I don't know. Did I?
Got some Quaaludes.
Yeah.
But then at that point, I like how the father comes in and is depressed. He doesn't have anybody. And you see the big, huge sign that's flashing, $332 in the hole. Don't have any money, but prison has less than that. And his father goes, hey, Mr. McIntosh, look, if you can, if it's okay, can you send prison home a little early? I'm like, the dude is just fucking bankrupt. And you want...
And I mean, if there was a real McIntosh and he turned that chair around, what he'd probably find is someone with a bullet in their mouth. Like, oh, I'm just going to turn that back around and leave.
Well, yeah. And then Chris's like, please send him home. It's his birthday. I'm like, wait, wasn't his birthday whenever his grandmother sent him the money for his on the same day
That's
as
true.
Chris's birthday?
Again, yeah, the timeline completely wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, it must have all happened within a week then or a couple of days. He's managed to get a million, spend a million, get bored of having money. It's all happened very quickly. Yeah. And then throw a big party for McIntosh, attended by loads of people who've come from to join it. And then, oh, it's so funny because the dad has the bit and the dad's leaving. And then that little kid is acting his heart out.
He is. That pulled on my heartstrings, though, to be honest with you.
Really? I was just
a
like,
a little
oh,
bit,
kid.
Because of Preston selling it, the actor selling it a little bit. He's like, I fucked up. I need to go home because none of this is for me. This is for a fake McIntosh that I actually mean up. So I need to go the fuck home. But he chases
around
the car.
It's time for his dad to leave.
Right?
His dad's like, McIntosh, can you send my son home? Okay, goodbye.
My other thing is, though, too, this is the hilarious part to me. My kid is running because I'm a stepfather. I'm thinking to myself, if I see my son running behind me, I would see him in the rearview mirror, right? I would actually stop. Just because I go, the father's going, hey, Dad, I think Prince is behind us. No, we're good. He's fine. He's an actor. No, he's in his little tuxedo right now. He's chasing after us. And he's not. We're good. We're going to have a surprise birthday. Your mom's going to have her boobs out and everything. We're going to like that whenever he comes home. And so we're going to be good. But
it's like, well, that's Preston now for his midnight tuxedo run.
But then he looks for his limo driver. Henry's not there. He thinks that he abandoned him. And now he's alone in this empty house because he gets everybody out of there because he can't afford the party. Actually, the little Southern woman went on ahead and told everybody to leave. So they left.
The bit where everybody was leaving, there was a bit that made me myself laughing. Everybody's leaving, and then someone just nicks her wig.
Like, really?
Reaches out, grabs her wig.
So that goes to show you they didn't even like the planner either, the party planner.
Someone snatches her wig. He's like, hey. And I was like, what the fuck was that? It'd
be funny if it was like little Richard or somebody that just snatched her wig.
I mean, you wouldn't blame the limo driver if he had Lyft because the kid like mugged him off completely. He was just trying to have fun with him, and this kid was like, ugh. You're so embarrassing. And it's like, well, I mean, you're a child.
Yeah.
And right. He's trying to appear. But yes, and then the villains turn up.
Then this is where it becomes Home Alone, like Stu said.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll let you guys break down this part with a whole entire gag of Home Alone.
Well, I mean, at one point, I thought he'd killed the main villain because he puts him into that ball and he pushes him in the water. And then you get a shot of him just like dead in a swimming pool.
It's like a horror movie.
It's like, I mean, fuck, that got dark real quick.
He was lucky that the ball had opened, because if it hadn't, he'd have drowned. And he'd have been trapped in there while it sank to the bottom. So they capture him at first, and they kind of hang around and do that thing that villains always do in films, where they do not kill an easily killable child. I mean, he's a child. You could just hit him over the head with something particularly hard, and that'd be the end of him. And they kind of... They chat a bit about their plans and how they're probably going to kill him. And he, you know, obviously doesn't take that line down, escapes. Then Tone Locke gets attacked by a batting cage and stands there and allows himself to be pummeled.
Fine. Ooh, that must have hurt. Just like the box office tumbling over this. He like fell at the box office.
Yeah. And then Berman gets a VR headset put on him. It's a little
he doesn't know what's going on. He's like, that's not how VR works.
No, you just take that off. And then he collapses into a chair and gets whizzed up into the ceiling. it's reminiscent of Lawnmower Man a little bit there. And then, yep. And then he traps Quigley's trying to find him, you know, badly. And then he traps him in the little ball and knocks him around the car. And then Quigley's, as you say, Stu, dead for all intents and purposes. In until the point, he's not, and they've got him, and now they're gonna the FBI are here. And confronted, Quigley then says, "Oh no, I'm McIntosh."
Which makes no sense. Which makes Why are you admitting this shit?
Yeah. Berman's plan. Well, at this point, the FBI there, so must have been trying to find McIntosh for money laundering.
Yeah.
So you've just admitted to the... It doesn't make any sense.
So you took up the blame that you didn't want to get involved in the first place.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that he was probably thinking, well, I'm not going to go to jail for being McIntosh because clearly the kid took the check. So therefore, I'm in the clear. That was probably what his lines of thinking was, but he goes, "Yeah, I want all these guys off my property." It's like, "Well, McIntosh, you're going to jail."
Yeah.
What?
But also, as an escaped convict, couldn't they very quickly be like, "You're not McIntosh, you're Quigley. You escaped from prison. We've been following you at the bank. This makes no sense. Who is McIntosh? The kid's McIntosh. Well, the kid's getting arrested as well. Everybody's getting arrested. The limo driver probably going to get arrested." Tone Long's definitely getting arrested.
Well, he's got ice cream, so at least he'll have a place.
Yeah, another bin full of ice cream, another garbage can full of ice cream.
Yeah.
Ooh, you can really taste the garbage. yeah, so then he gets arrested for being McIntosh, which, I mean, I dread to think how this gets unpicked in the courts. It probably will get thrown out.
There's no evidence linking him. There's nothing.
He's probably going back to prison for breaking out of prison, but apart from that, it's all circumstantial.
Yeah.
You get to unpick this quite easily in court and get it thrown out. Any good lawyer worth their salt would be able to get you out of this.
Right. And then, also, too, this is also the part that's very cringy, where you actually have the kiss.
Cringy? Is that the word you're using?
So I know we talked about this behind the scenes and everything, too, before we started. I said, as a kid...
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so in a couple of years, I might actually get a chance to land a girl like Shay at age 13. Mm. And then I'm like, okay, I like the ending. It wrapped up really good. And then as a preteen, I'm like, should I be feeling some kind of way or am I overanalyzing this movie and checking my own self and wondering if there's something the fuck wrong with me? And then in my 20s, I revisited again. I'm like, no, this is definitely creepy. This definitely should not have happened. There's no way this FBI agent would be even into you. There should be a movie called, there's actually a movie called She's Not Into You. He is not into you, bruh. And she was into Henry the whole time. But she was not, like I said, what the fuck was he going to do? And then even 10 years, he even tries to negotiate the age that he wants. This is like a business transaction now.
She negotiates as well, which is even weird. Right.
There's a word for that. It's called grooming. It's so creepy and it's so like, I mean, to this point I've been to stop flirting with that child, but definitely don't kiss that child because again that is assault. And the other thing, this is right, so as a younger kid, like, you show me this and it obviously be like, oh yeah, an old woman, yeah, that'd be really really cool, right? Yeah, because she's really fit. What this does is really normalize something that gets normalized in media a lot. The idea of the old woman and the younger man being fine. There's a great film that came out, was it this year or late last year, May, December, which sort of, with Julianne Moore, that sort of shows the sort of long-lasting effects of that kind of, you know, female on male grooming, and the impact that has. It's been a lot of stuff in the UK in like the last few years with sort of news stories of teachers that have sex with children and all that kind of like that. And it's the, and you know, there is that. It's the South Park parodied it really well in an episode where whenever they talk about it, the cops are like, "Nice, nice." But it's like that parody works because everybody thinks it's fine and it's really not fine. Because you think, right, switch that. Have a 12, 13-year-old girl and a grown man.
Yeah. Completely different. Yeah.
And nobody's going to be like, oh, it's just a bit of harmless fun, because it's not a bit of harmless fun and it's really troubling. And I watched it and I was like, she kissed him. Okay, wow.
Yeah, if she'd kissed him on the forehead, maybe, like, oh, he'd get away with that. But she full-on kisses him on the lips. Like, no.
So fucking weird. And then even Preston doesn't even kiss her. He just, like,
Yeah, as he would. He's what? I've been calling him 12 this whole time.
No, I think he is 12. Yeah, I think he's 12.
He's 12 years old, right? He doesn't know what he wants. He thinks he knows because he's seen TV, but he doesn't know what that really means at 12. And it's just like, oh, boy. And it's weird because Disney have taken loads of stuff off of Disney Plus for kind of, or they have warnings at the beginning of certain films. Now saying this has old out. Yeah, no, it doesn't. And that's weird because it's like you watch like an old cartoon, like you watch like Dumbo, and it'll have at the beginning, this has got outdated stereotypes and blah, 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 blah. And you know, rightfully so. You put that up, you let people make the decision about whether they want to watch it. This, nothing.
Nope, it's perfectly fine, perfectly normal. It's the 90s. Anything goes.
The 90s.
It's the 90s. We all have to pass our time somehow.
Right. But yeah, you have a point though, man. Like, okay, so even in Lady and the Tramp, it has that warning. It also has that warning with Aristocats and stuff like that too. This one doesn't. And I feel like this one should at least have it. I don't think anybody is trying to search for Blank Check other than me, because I'm the one who wants to do a review on it. So I might be the 1% in America that decided, hey, I want to do a Blank Check anniversary, even though I don't think anybody wants to celebrate this movie, but I want to talk about it because of the fact that I think it's important to talk about movies that haven't aged well and how we can shape films differently and look at things differently than what we did as kids. That was the main purpose and the main goal of this. So this movie does not age well. Even at the very end of this movie, when we have, after they get arrested and everything, and even whenever they arrest Tone Loc, I like how they arrest him. He goes, oh, I'm funny man, you're coming with me. What? Me? Yeah, you're coming. So, yeah, you're coming because you were creeping at the park with all the other guys.
Yeah.
But Shay and Preston decide to call each other a few years to form a kisses, the later goodbye, the parting ways, and Preston and Henry say their farewells. After Preston gets home, his family throws him a birthday party. His father apologizes for being so harsh with him when it came to money. Preston's family surprises him with a cake and asks him, why were you kissing that FBI agent? No, he doesn't. Yeah, that's not and asks him to make a wish for the FBI agent. Preston thinks he already has something, everything he wished for. Being in puberty. Until he sees Shay's fly at the bank and decides to make a wish about her. And then it closes.
I mean, he's going to make a right mess of that flyer.
I was going to say, why did he take it in the first place? Are you dirty little bastard?
We always know what's going on in that bedroom. This is Preston's time.
It's funny as well with Henry, where he says his goodbyes. And he's like, oh, you know, it was good hanging out with us. Like, you know, you still, I mean, it's inappropriate, but you still could. You could still be friends, but only you're not getting paid anymore. Right, well.
No.
There you go. You should have that big cup of ice cream.
Fucking
and at that point, that's when Henry becomes that whole entire deal of know who your friends are, know who to trust, because there's nothing but money hungry gold diggers.
Yeah.
Jelly.
Me included. Bye
bye. See, there's no message. There's no clear message with this movie. There's nothing there's nothing there like for a person to learn anything from.
It's really confused. Like, it's, you know, I think it's trying to say money can't buy you happiness. I think it's trying to say that. But it's also...
But it can buy you an FBI agent.
Yes.
But it also, like, it gives him no alternative, no real reason for learning that lesson, apart from he runs out of money and he's still miserable. And it's like, but he doesn't... It's like, oh, I've got everything I want right here, but his family never learned a lesson. Nothing changes. He's got no friends. He still has no friends. It doesn't really have much of a plot. I mean, it does have a plot. But it also is very bland. Like, it's very run-of-the-mill, elements from other things. It's just, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. Whilst, as I said earlier, missing some of those core components that those other films have, like a age-appropriate love interest.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something to be learned. It's like, there's reasons why comedies and rom-coms in particular follow a certain formula, because the formula works.
Right.
Now, you can tweak it a little bit here and there, but for the most part, you need to have, like, there's no jeopardy point in the third act, whereas apart from the criminals catching up with him, but it's not, at no point do you feel like, oh, he's lost everything and now he has to get it all back. It's like, he hasn't. His family love him. His family always loved him. They were a bit dickish, but they didn't, you know, and they've not changed. So what's the message here? Money can't buy you happiness, but
don't steal from
criminals.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so now we're going to go in with the stripping away the nostalgia and how we felt about it. So, Stu, I'm going to go with you first. So, stripping away the nostalgia, even though you only seen this for the first time and your rating was already a little low, what do you give it now?
I mean, I didn't hate it. I didn't watch this going, this is the worst fucking thing I've ever seen. But at the same time, I didn't love it. So, 3. It's fine. It's not offensive, apart from, obviously, the paedophilia. But it's just like...
That's a very important caveat to make.
But that aside, it's just a play-by-numbers family movie with a lot of tropes and silliness and montages, and it's fine. Like, me and my wife watched it last night. I'm like, all right, just kind of indifferent to it. Didn't love it, didn't hate you, just like, okay. So I'd say a 3.
Okay, what about for you, Smith? What about you?
I'd probably say, look, I'd probably agree, right? It is the cinematic equivalent of Magnolia. It's there. I have no strong feelings about it. I mean, that one troubling bit aside, it's just sort of background noise. It's just so bland. There's nothing to it. There's nothing inventive. It doesn't do anything new. And you can look at that. If you look at the Rupert Wainwright, who's the, not to be confused with Bruce S. Wainwright, who is the director of this, and the things he went on to direct, like, his directing career is very limited. There's 2 notable things on it. 1, Stigmata, which is crap, and the remake of The Fog, which is the cinematic equivalent of having bleach thrown in your eyes. So this is probably the best of those 3, but that isn't saying anything.
No.
But yeah, so I'd say 3. 3 is probably fair. How about you?
Okay, so nostalgically, like I said, I gave it like a 7 because of all the things I mentioned. Stripping away the nostalgia, it made me not like this even more now, looking into adult lenses and stripping away the nostalgia and everything. So I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm probably going to go at least a 2.5.
Oh, wow. Considering you love this as a child and you've got lower than us, it's incredible.
That was before I found out that... But
paedophilia is wrong.
Right, exactly. So... So yeah, it doesn't age well. It's definitely a cringe movie. It tries to be multiple things. It tries to live up to the Home Alone flavor, but it doesn't have that Home Alone flavor. It tries to borrow other elements, and there's no structure. There's no there's, like you mentioned, Stu, there's nothing in this timeline that jives up with anything. It's like cookie cutter, where everything is just all over the place. And even though we're, as kids, we're supposed to believe this is happening, but in adult lenses, for me, the timeline doesn't make sense. Yeah, Bush's birthday party on the same day as Preston's. You have McIntosh's birthday on the same day as Preston's. You have the FBI agent. You have all this other stuff. It just does not match. It does not jive up. So if I'm going to have to recommend a movie for anybody to watch that's better than this, it's Home Alone. Even Richie Rich is better than this.
Yep.
Definitely. And I feel bad for the McDonald's workers who have to work in that fucking mansion now. Because at first I was thinking to myself, this is cool. Now I'm thinking through adult lenses. I'm like, he was such a rich asshole that he had a McDonald's in his room.
Food.
And I feel bad for those workers. But, you know, I just have to say, Blank Check just does not hold up. And it was also a flop at the box office. And there's a reason why it was only out a week where I live. Mm.
Was it a flop, though? Because I saw it. It was made for like $11 million. It made like $36 million. I know probably the grand scheme you think that is a flop, but it made some profit.
Well, here's the thing. If you take a third of what you intake from movie theaters and stuff like that, because here's the thing, you take a third of that and you have to go, because movie theater, because of the concessions and stuff like that, you have to pay your PR people and all that stuff.
Yeah, true.
And then the rest goes over into the movie theater, and therefore it's a flop.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing I heard was that if you, any film, you basically have to double the budget. So the budget says 11, it's really 22, because 22 includes...
Right, because of reshoots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And plus catering for the...
Yeah.
For shade. But yeah. I'm sorry, I'm still... I need a hoop, but yeah. But that's everything as far as the show goes. But guys, I do appreciate you guys coming out here. I know it's 9 o'clock over there in the UK, but thank you for being on the show. This meant so much to me to be able to do this with you guys. Do you guys have anything coming out as far as your podcast goes?
Yeah, we just released an episode on Crocodile Dundee, so you can check that out at It Doesn't Hold Up Podcast. We are on YouTube, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the other good places you listen to podcasts. So please do check us out. We're actually going into TV shows next. So the next show or topic, whatever we're covering, is the TV series of The A-Team. So we've covered 20 episodes on movies. We're now going into TV shows, and we're covering the 80s TV show, The A-Team. So do check us out.
So, guys, I actually have some other shows coming out. I have a True Lies 30th anniversary review that I'm going to be doing sometime soon.
Excellent.
An American Pie 25th anniversary that I'm doing on the, matter of fact, on the 23rd of this month at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time for that. I also have actor Jake Jensen from Challengers coming in on the show on the 30th to do an interview. And that's 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And then after that, I'm going to have some other stuff that I'm going to try and plan out. I might even try doing a Shallow Hal review to see how that film holds up or if it doesn't hold up. So that's going to be an interesting one as well. But yeah, that's going to be it as far as our blank check. So guys, remember this one rule. Do not try and get a blank check from your grandmother. And if you do, make sure it's more than $11. And do not try to hit on anyone at the bank of your age 11. And she's quite 10 times your age. So with that being said, that's going to be it for the show. Thank you so much, Smith. Thank you, Stu. Please hold after the show. Please stay in the room. We'll talk a little bit and then that'll be it.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.